AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid, the sports grid, Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. Let's do this thing. It's UFC 249, the fight week. It's going to be fight week all week long, actually, next week in Jacksonville, Florida as well. We've been all over it. It's been a lot of fun talking MMA all week. We had Joey Odessa on earlier in the week. We had Lou Gamblu, .com's Lou, on with us earlier in the week as well. We went through every fight. We sort of kicked the tires on the card earlier in the week with Joey Odessa. It's always difficult. I'd like to see pictures from the weigh-in. But I do find it fascinating. MMA Junkie's doing a great job. John Morgan's doing a great job of documenting the behind-the-scenes, preparations that the UFC has put into this. And how are they keeping the fighters safe? Joey Odessa returns, and this is his last appearance before the fight card. So it's best bet night tonight. Joey Odessa steps up. And what's up, Joey?
What's happening, Jay?
We're doing good, Joe. It's good to have the UFC back, although it wasn't even that long ago that they fought in Brazil with no fans. You know, I enjoyed that card because I went 6-2. I remember I made 8 bets and I won 6 of them. I'm hoping that I can be as successful on Saturday night as I was last time in Brasilia. But nevertheless, I don't know if you saw the John Morgan, his tweets or over at MMA Junkie. He's one of the media members that is covering the event, and he's documenting it, in which, you know, he gets tested daily, and, he's told you can walk around the hotel. There's a few restaurants open for everybody, but you can't leave the complex. And they told him, don't go over there. That's where the fighters are. So they have the fighters in a certain part of the hotel. They have the media in another certain part of the hotel. They have everybody isolated, not quarantined, but isolated. You know, you're allowed to walk around, but stay away from people. And, you know, all the fighters are getting tested. And, you saw everyone's wearing masks. Everyone is socially distanced. They're not having the routine, the typical press conference. It's a virtual press conference. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of precautions that the UFC have taken. So far, so good, Joe. I do find it interesting, though, to see the behind the scenes that we saw.
Yeah, I think this card's going to be a big mental card. These guys, different circumstances, fighters fighting under different circumstances. You know, I mentioned early in the week, I'm waiting until these weigh-ins take place before I make a bet. I mean, some of these guys, I mean, look at Cruz. Cruz hasn't been down to weight since maybe, 2016? I mean, there's going to be some interesting things going on here. I saw Morgan had posted pictures of portable saunas and things. A lot of things are different here for this card.
A big key, you're right, is the mental. Listen, the mental toughness of fighters has always been something that's paramount and important at all times. It is unorthodox, though, right? I mean, some fighters didn't have their normal training partners. Some fighters didn't train at the gym. Some did. Some weren't. Everyone handled this differently. But when you get down to it, Joey, a fight's a fight, right? A fight's a fight. And I don't think the lack of fans has any any bearing on the fight either. We talked about it before. You know, in sports, it doesn't really seem to have that much of an effect. It hadn't in the limited sports we've seen without fans, and it really didn't in Brazil either. So, you know, I don't know. Like, at least everyone's in the same situation and position, right? You know, the only question is, you know, we talked about it, has Tony Ferguson overtrained? That's kind of the one concern I've had about Tony Ferguson coming into this fight. But ultimately, I don't think so. I think he'll be fine.
I don't know, Gabe. I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, he's going, you know, he's been training for Khabib. Then he switched it up on him. He goes, he makes the weight for whatever reason. You know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, getting to, you know, scheduling your workout so that you could have peak performance on a certain day. And it looks like Ferguson, you know, he switched up that date a few times. Gaethje gets a few extra weeks to train. Doesn't have a whole lot to lose coming in on kind of short notice, even though he's got the extra time. I don't know. There's a lot of big question marks for this card, you know, especially on the two main events. Dominic Cruz coming back from a long layoff. And the other thing is, I mean, how much sparring these guys got? You know, how much sparring did a lot of these guys get in? You know, when's the last time Dominic Cruz, like, got punched? You know what I mean? By somebody. And the other, you know, different training partners and things. I mean, I think their entire routine was thrown off. And I think a lot of it, you know, I think it's going to, a lot of these fights are, you know, emotional maturity. That's what I'm looking for in the guys that I bet this weekend. I'm looking for emotional maturity, the ability to go out there under, you know, different circumstances. Well, you know, I'm not going to say extreme circumstances, but they are a little bit extreme when these guys are kind of locked in, cabin fever, you know, a lot of unknowns, flying to Jacksonville, being, you know, I don't want to say being locked up, but kind of being, you know, on lockdown. You know, different. You know, I said, you know, some of these guys are bringing, you know, they're going to have to bring a week worth of food with them, you know, and different, you know, I think there's only, what, two corner guys allowed. I just think that it's going to be a lot different. You know, you're going to have guys. I mean, look what happened when you took these guys and put them in a TU in that Ultimate Fighter house and you locked them up for a couple of weeks. I mean, they went off the rails, some of them. You saw some guys that were mentally weak, shut down, didn't perform. Some guys, you know, really excelled. And then, you know, and then when they got to the big show, you know, they turned around and laid an egg. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, you know what, though? Tony Ferguson won, though, right? He was in that house. He was a nut job, too. And, you know, it's a good point, though. Listen, we don't know, Joey, right? That's the big key to this. It's a lot like the virus. We don't really know anything, right? It just changes all the time. And, you know, it's uncharted data, so to speak. What I find interesting, I'm going to look forward, Joey, to hearing the fighters talk after. All right? I want to hear the fighters talk after the card and a bit about basically, I like this about it. You know what I mean? You know, it actually worked out well for me because of this. Or, yeah, you know, that didn't work. And, you know, and somebody says that. I didn't get to train because that was Amanda Nunes' deal. She lives in Florida. She could have fought. I mean, she's there, right? She lives there. I mean, but she isn't. And she basically stated, it's not the virus. She said, it's not that I'm scared to fight because of the virus. She said, I don't have my training camp. She said, I don't have my training partners. I don't have, like, my coaches. And she's a champion. And it's funny, you know, I brought this up with Russ Amber, the champion, you know, his trainer. He works for Lomachenko now. He's Lomachenko's cut man. And a good friend of mine, Russ Amber from Montreal, used to be the trainer for Otis Grant and Jean Pascal, a lot of guys. He even, like, he trained from scratch and stuff. And I asked him point blank. I said, would you recommend a fighter fight now? Or would you be like, nah, like, hold off until after? And he said, no, I'd let my fighter fight. He goes, I've got no safety issues now. But he said, I wouldn't let a champion fight. Right? And it's a good point. And you brought it up, too, about, like, Ferguson and Gaethje. They got a lot to lose under weird circumstances. You know what I mean? Like, they definitely, Ferguson has a lot at stake here. Definitely under very, very weird circumstances. But he said, if you're an up-and-coming fighter, then yeah, you know, let it fly and get out there. One thing about this card too, Joey, is so like I was saying, I look forward to getting sort of the information after, and then we can use that, bro, for Wednesday's card next week and next Saturday's card, right? So we sort of get a feel what was it like for these fighters under these circumstances. Because we don't know that. Like for all we, you know what I mean? We don't know. And it's like life, Joey. You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, like, let's say, like, look at Conor McGregor, man. I was talking about Conor earlier in the week, Joey. Like, look at Conor McGregor. I think this virus thing is good for him. He can't go out. Like, if you look at him, he's in better shape right now. He's going to hospitals. He's donating money. He's working out all the time. He's punching a bag. He's not doing rails. He's not banging chicks. He can't. There's no chicks or rails to do. You know what I'm saying? The club isn't open. Like, I'm sure for some guys, Joey, this is actually a benefit and a positive for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all relative. Like, look at a guy like John Jones. I mean, he kind of...
Yeah. He's just a loser, and then he uses the virus as an excuse. What a loser, huh? Like everybody, I'm worried about the virus. Shut up, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's out firing off guns and shit. I just think, you know, everybody's different. Who knows? You know what's going to be interesting is where are these guys going to fight Wednesday? These guys fight Wednesday. You all right, Dave?
Yeah.
All right, these guys fight Wednesday. When are they flying into Jacksonville? Are they coming in on Friday or so? Are they coming in today or tomorrow? Like, when are they going to get to Jacksonville? Are they going to show up on Tuesday? You know, when these guys ship out? I mean, that's got to be
a good point.
The logistics of this has to be absolutely crazy.
It's a good point. And, you know, it's something actually, it is a good point that a lot of times fighters will generally get, if they fight on Saturday, fighters will often get to the city on like the Tuesday or the Monday even. You know what I mean? Like sometimes even a Sunday night. Like a big time fighter will get there a week before. Like a champ, like George St. Pierre when he was fighting in Vegas, he'd get to Vegas like 7 nights before. You get used to the climate, you get used to the time zone difference, the food, the what, just, you know, just basically like, you know, like Diaz. It's funny, I like to talk to Nick Diaz about this because I remember years ago, Nick Diaz said that he would always fly, he would try to fly in like 10 days or 2 weeks. He goes, never fly in, you know, the week of the fight or a couple of days before the fight because of germs on airplanes. And he was onto it years ago. It's funny, all the crazy Diaz is, right? But he was onto it. He said, man, there's a lot of germs. He goes, it kills your immune system. You get sick and stuff. And he goes, I never traveled days before. And you know what I noticed is John Morgan, we talked about him earlier from MMA Junkie, he was on the same ride as Ngannou going there. Like Ngannou's just, like you said, Joe, it's kind of unorthodox. Like Ngannou's just flying in from Vegas with Morgan basically a couple of days before the fight and then going and getting tested a million times and, you know, staying in a hotel room by himself for the next 48 hours. It is a unique situation, but, you know, we don't know, well, Joe. Like we don't know how it's going to affect people positively or negatively. We just don't know.
So you also, you got, you know, like Greg Hardy, he's not training down at America Top Team. He's driving back and forth from Dallas. He's made a few trips back and forth from Dallas to Florida, you know, driving. It's like a 20-some-hour drive because he was afraid to get on a plane because he's got asthma and he's high risk.
Yeah, that's not ideal. That's not ideal. That's a very good point that you raised as far as, because remember, yeah, he had the inhaler in between rounds.
I mean, sitting in a car for 20 hours, I mean, you know what that's like. I mean, a plane for a few hours is torture. Sitting in a car driving, I mean, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of unknowns on this card. You know, if it wasn't so long since the last card, you know, this is like, you know, if everything was normal and then a card like this popped up, this is the kind of card I'd probably just sit back and relax and watch it just to see how it pans out.
Yeah, you know what? And Hardy's a big dude, too. He can't be comfortable driving 20 hours, especially when you're that big. You know, that's one fight, actually, I don't trust. You know, I think Hardy's going to win the fight, but I'm not going to bet it. You know, maybe I probably end up will just because I'm a degenerate. And I'm so, you know, I was saying, well, I got to be disciplined when it comes back. And here I am. But I'm just staying with Hardy. He should win the fight, but there's always something with him, bro. You never know. You know what I mean? Like, you know, his fights end in controversy often. You know, he had the inhaler in between rounds. You know, he kneed the guy in the face when he was down. It's always like, you know, you can be winning with him like I was, and then you lose, and it's frustrating. You know what I mean? And it's happened a few times now that I just don't trust him enough.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, what can you really say? It's like betting Golota. You know, Andrew Vallada back in the day with his fouls against Riddick Bowe.
Yeah, Galata, yeah, the Polish boxer. Yeah, I remember Roger Galata. Yeah, you're right. There was always something. There's just certain guys that are like that. But what do you think about that fight? You think Hardy wins this fight against Castro?
Wow. I mean, I don't think Castro's that good. But at the same time, I don't think Hardy's all that either. Castro didn't really, Castro's never really beat anybody. You know, he's got a couple of losses. He's been knocked out before. I gotta think Hardy wins this fight. You know, as much as I like to bet against him, you can't lay the price with Hardy. I mean, you just can't. You know, it's a dog or pass scenario, and it becomes kind of cliche. Everybody says that dog or pass. So I don't like to say that. I just there's just better fights. You know. If you're going to pick three or four fights to bet on this card, Hardy's not one of them, unless you really know something, you know?
The question is, what's the parlay buster? Because people are going to be putting Fabricio Verdum in the parlays. Ngannou's going to be a popular parlay pick as well. You know, listen, Verdum's 42 years old, but so is the Russian dude he's fighting, and the Russian guy's got no stand-up. And Verdum is very good on the ground. And Verdum's going to be aware of the submission game, and he's going to use the stand-up. You know, Verdum hasn't fought in a little while. He was suspended, PED use. But I know you said earlier in the week Verdum's a popular pick. He's going to be in every parlay, isn't he? Is he, you know, who's the parlay buster? What's the one that you think, man, you know, these guys can get caught with? Ngannou, Spann. We go down the list of the big favorites. Which one of them do you think is the most vulnerable?
Maybe Qatar against Stevens.
Yeah, he's minus. I don't trust him at minus 250.
I mean, Qatar minus 245. I mean, that's pretty pricey for him, I think, against Stevens. Even though Stevens lost double digits. He's lost more than 10 bouts. I don't think Nagano's going to lose to Jair. I just don't see it happening. I just think if he stays disciplined, doesn't get caught with any whooping shots or anything like that. I mean, Overeem was beating this guy. And not to take anything away from Overeem, but I think if Ngannou stays disciplined in this fight, doesn't get himself, in bad position, I think he'll be all right.
No, you have to be impressed with Ngannou, the way he's responded after the couple of losses. He's bounced back. He's bounced back in a big way. All 14 in Ngannou's career victories via stoppage. How about this? Ngannou has earned his past three victories by knockout in a combined 2 minutes and 22 seconds. That's how long his last three fights have lasted. 2 minutes and 22 freaking seconds. But with that being stated, I'm actually rolling the dice with the over 1.5 in that fight. I think that... I think Rosenstruck, Geronzino there, he's going to be smart enough to stay away from Ngannou, or at least try to for a little while before Ngannou catches him. But one thing, and I always say this, Joey, and we'll take a break in a second and we'll get Joey's best bets. But one thing that I always say about like UFC cards, this is a really fun fight card to watch. It's like, this is cool. That's a pretty cool matchup. That's a cool fight. Yet the cool cards are sometimes tougher to bet on, right? And sometimes the cards where, like, the average person doesn't like it, it's like, oh, yeah, man, we can crush this one. Like that last one in UFC Brazil, it wasn't really big names. This is bigger names. And I went 6-2 on that card. Some of these fights are tricky, but we'll get we have one more segment with Odessa before UFC 249. We'll get Joey's thoughts on the main event, the co-main event, and see what he likes, if there's something flying under the radar that we haven't hit. I'll share my best bets with you. I've already done a video for FanDuel and started to move some numbers over there as well after the video went out. Renzi Unfiltered continues.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life. So I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get on the grid, Sports Grid. Renzi Unfiltered continues. The podcast. We're talking UFC 249. It's great to have the UFC back. It's great to have Joey Odessa back as well. All right, Joey. So let's get down to business right now. Main event, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. Numbers pretty much remain strong. It's been bouncing around here on the East Coast. You know, 172, 175, 178. Currently sitting, Tony Ferguson, minus 178 right now. You were leaning with the underdog earlier in the week. Where do you stand on the main event now?
I'm going to have to go with Justin Gaethje. I think his wrestling is, his wrestling is damn good. And he hits like a Mack truck. I think that Gaethje's going to catch him.
You think Tony Ferguson gets knocked out for the first time in his career? You're calling the upset here. I'm going with Ferguson. I'm going Ferguson. You know, all the talk, Joey, and I saw a stat of all the talk of Justin Gaethje and, his power and everything, and about how hittable Tony Ferguson is. Ferguson gets hit a lot, and Ferguson does, but so does Gaethje. You know, I saw a stat that Gaethje averages eight significant strikes per minute that he lands. And he absorbs 10 significant punches, strikes per minute. And Tony Ferguson lets it fly. Like, Ferguson doesn't have that, like, knockout power, but it's the sheer volume that starts to bust you up with the elbows, the kicks, the punches. He's just relentless. To me, it's the relentlessness that's the difference. But, you know, hey,
I worry about Gaethje getting cut. It's something that I was – you know, I was thinking maybe Gaethje comes in, you know, because those elbows, I mean, from odd angles. And, you know, Ferguson is really an unorthodox fighter. And again, you know, we talked earlier in the week about Gaethje's opponents and Ferguson's opponents. I mean, these guys have fought, you know, Ferguson's got, you know, the guys he's fought recently are a little long in the tooth, but the same could be said of Gaethje, you know, with the exception of Poirier and Alvarez, and he lost both those fights. I think Gaethje's going to catch him, and it's going to be interesting because, you know, it is a pay-per-view, but it's in an empty arena, and I just want to see how quick these guys are to, you know, to blow the whistle, to stop these fights. I don't know, you know, the Florida doctors, you know, whether Gaethje gets cut or not. I just think Gaethje's going to catch him. I can't lay the price on Ferguson. Too much has happened. You know, I looked at this fight earlier in the week, and like 2 weeks ago when it was scheduled for April, and I said, wow, this is a good spot for a guy that, like Ferguson to kind of have a hiccup, you know what I mean? But the problem was a lot of the public liked Gaethje then. But now, so I kind of, it's weird because I see a lot more people liking Ferguson, and Gaethje's had more time to prepare. So I don't know. You know, I'm on Gaethje. I'm going to bet Gaethje comes Saturday unless something happens at these weigh-ins. You know, flips me.
What I find strange, though, is that not everybody, but a lot of people in the MMA industry are picking Gaethje to win the fight, yet the number is sort of creeping up with Ferguson, right? I don't know. Like we said, it's everything's unorthodox about this. We have people that don't usually bet on the UFC betting more right now, and it'll really, the money, the lines could get really crazy on Saturday night, actually, because of this. Because even the casual guy really hasn't really jumped in on it yet. And you know he's going to when he's like, oh, shit, UFC's tonight. Yeah, I'm going to bet this. And they're going to log on. And then numbers are going to start getting crazy across the board. All right, so me and Joey will agree to disagree.
It's like the Kentucky Derby, you know what I mean? Everybody's going to make a bet this weekend.
Exactly. It is. It is like Kentucky Derby Saturday. But I'm taking the man in Tony Ferguson and has not lost a fight since Eli Manning and the New York Giants beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. It's crazy. That's the last time this guy lost a fight. Yeah, LeBron James.
You had that queued up. That's nice.
I used it earlier today. I used it. When you do as many shows, sometimes you got to repeat things. No, but you know what, Joe? I looked it up. I like to do that when something's in a long time. I'm like, all right, you know, what happened the last time? Like, to put it in context. And Ferguson hasn't lost since 2012. And the only way I can really sort of remember years is through sports. And that's actually when I lived in Vegas. I think it was right around when you came down in that era is the last time he lost. He lost to Michael Johnson in 2012. Pretty freaking impressive. So he's got a 12-fight win streak. It's been 8 years since he'd lost. And listen, Gaethje's a murderer as well, coming over from the World Series of Fighting. All right, so the co-main event here. You know, when it was first announced, I was like, you know what? I was going to try to be trendy and hip and pull the trigger maybe on Dominic Cruz. But Cejudo's just too good to mess with. I got a lot of respect for Cruz. I don't think he'll embarrass himself, but I think Cejudo's going to win. Who you got?
I'm with Cejudo. I think Henry beats him. I rewatched a couple of fights, and, I was watching Faber and Cruz, even though the scorecards were so wide. And I just think that 5 years, four years now, is just a little bit too long for him to be laid off on the down and weight. He's got to make weight, and, Cruz got to get down the weight, and I don't know. I think Henry's going to beat him.
Yeah, I'm on board with that that pick as well. All right, so let's get to the next fight here. Nagano and Rozenstruik. What do you make of this one? Nagano's a big favorite. I'm not gonna lie. I'll put Nagano in a parlay. I'm gonna roll the dice with the over 1.5. We got the Nagano 14-3 against Rozenstruik 10-0 here.
Yeah, I think Nagano wins it. That's not something I'm gonna run out the bet because Rozenstruik is 10-0. He hasn't tasted defeat, but he got beaten. He got beaten some kickboxing matches in the past. He's been stopped before, in the kickboxing. So I have to think that Nagano will be able to beat him. Going back, who did he lose? He's got a couple kickboxing losses. Rozenstruik does, going back.
Yeah, he's an older guy, exactly. He's 10-0, but he's like 30 years old or something, right? It's not like he's a kid.
He lost back in 2012. If you want to draw a comparison to Ferguson, he got knocked out in 2012 in some K-1 stuff. Or super combat, something like that. But anyways, he can be knocked out. I haven't seen, Francis hasn't been stopped, right? Lost a couple decisions. So I think Nagano wins this fight. I think if he stays disciplined in this fight and, stays home, doesn't get himself overextended, I think he'll beat him.
Yeah, and he's getting close to title shot status again, right? He's reclimbed the ladder right now. So you brought up earlier a potential upset here. Jeremy Stephens. That's the thing. Stephens is kind of, Stephens isn't the fighter that he was. But the problem with Stephens just been on a, he's never changed. He's never really evolved. So he's not getting any younger. He's almost fighting a younger version of himself, actually, if you think about it, right? In Calvin Kattar here. What they both lost to Zabit. Kattar did beat Ricardo Lamas, and he beat Fish Gold. And, of course, there was two fights to Yair Rodriguez with Stevens. Remember, they got into it in Mexico.
Yeah, throw that parlay buster out of there. Kattar, that number's high, but Kattar's going to beat him. The more I think about it, Stevens hasn't looked good in a while, and Yair kicked his ass pretty good. I think that Kattar will beat him. I can't call that the parlay buster. Usually when there's a parlay buster, it's that bout that you think isn't gonna. It's a parlay buster for a reason. You just don't think it's gonna happen. Maybe Nico Price and Luque. That's a high favorite right there.
So we talked about Hardy and DeCastro. DeCastro 6-0. Hardy should get this done. Hardy should get this done. They're clearly trying to position him and build him. They put him on all these sort of high-profile cards all the time. He was on the first ESPN card. He's on this card. There's a pattern here that they want Hardy to be successful. And, you know, as you said, the problem is just he's a hard guy to trust. He's so inexperienced and he's raw that weird things happen in his fights all the time. But with that being stated, I do think he gets it done. I'm looking up here. I want to see the total of this fight, actually. Let's see. You know it's going to be 1.5, but what's the juice? Because this might not be – this fight could go a while. This could be an ugly, boring fight, actually. Yeah, 1.5 over, -156. I'm going to go over here, Joey, over 1.5 in the Greg Hardy fight.
You know that that kid that the Castro fought in the Contender Series was like a 7-1 favorite over Castro in the Contender Series. That's that Meek.
Oh, he was, huh?
Yeah. I mean, not that that means anything. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. You're saying he has cashed a big ticket before as an underdog, you're saying.
Yeah. But I don't think it's, is Greg Hardy. They've been, they've been kind of throwing him softballs for a while.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They are trying to, and he screws it up. Not all the time. Listen, in the last fight he lost, it was a step up in class for him, right? Against the Russian, was it Volkov against the Russian? And, at least he went the distance. It was a learning experience for him. And it seems like Hardy's in this for real. Like, Hardy wants to be a champion. So, and like I said, I think they are trying to build him up a little bit. They almost like his controversy that he has around him. Anthony Pettis and Cerrone. I'm starting to get a little worried about this one, but I've already told people I'm taking Pettis. There's no turning back on this for me. You like Cowboy early in the week. You standing by Cowboy here?
Yeah, two guys that are winding down, maybe to the end of their careers. Pettis has looked better recently, if you could say that, maybe because of the Thompson fight. But, I got to think the Cowboy comes out here and gives it his all. But, again, Thompson is going into the second round of that Thompson fight, Pettis wasn't looking too good there. I think that, I said that, Pettis could easily be 0-4 in his last five, 0-5 in his last six, take out that Thompson win. I mean, he did beat Kaseya, but, going back, I don't know. I think Cerrone's fought the better guys recently again. I mean, Cerrone's been a tough look at McGregor, Gaethje, and Ferguson. I mean, it's three top guys right there, top guys in the division. Cerrone did beat Ike Quinta in 2019, along with that Hernandez kid that a lot of people didn't expect him to beat. So, I don't know. I think Cerrone might have one left in him. I hope so.
I was on him against that Hernandez kid. I remember cashing that. I know. And Cowboy could be, but I'm getting worried about this one. But the money is trickling in on Pettis. It's the number is climbing. You know who the money's coming in on now, too, is Uriah Hall. Now, Jacker is down to -120.
They always bet Pettis. I don't know what it is, man. It's, when people think of Anthony Pettis, they picture, I think, like that kick, it was like the kick
right, the around the world.
When he came off the cage and knocked out
Benson Henderson, yeah.
Yeah, Benson Henderson. I mean, that was a long time ago. And again, people say, well, geez, you're bringing up a fight from, God, it was, had to be 8-9 years ago. But I mean, those highlights stick in your head, and Pettis does have better highlight reel wins than Cerrone does. So I don't know. I think that plays into an effect with the preview shows and things. Maybe why Pettis got some of this money. I think
there are guys that lose often that people will bet on all the time, anyways, though. And it's funny. I usually bet against Pettis because I sort of know. I thought that he hit a wall, and like I said on the video, Joe, he went from being on the cover of a Wheaties box to the side of a milk carton. Being missing in action.
Yeah.
He really did. And people, you're right. I think it went to his head. It was I think it was literally the ESPN Sports Center moment of the year. The kick.
He won one fight. He won one fight in 3 years after that.
The only
guy he beat was Gilbert Melendez. He didn't win a fight again until the end of 2016.
Now you're getting me real worried about this. So Joey's on Cowboy. Uriah Hall is now only +102. Numbers moving there. That's coming down.
Yeah, that's coming down. I think I'm going to kick myself in the ass because I'm always taking the grapplers over the punchers. Always. But Jacare, he fell in love with his hands. And he did what did he his last fight, didn't he go up in weight? He was he gave it a shot at light heavyweight and he didn't do too good. Now he's coming back down, or I don't know.
He's fallen in love with his hands too much over the years with age, and that's what gets him in trouble. That's why I think it could be trouble against Uriah Hall.
I think so. I think Hall might clip him at some point, and there's no, I think there's no question it'll hurt him. I mean, Jacare's been knocked out 3 times before, and I think it's a possibility here. Granted, it's been a while since he's been knocked out. Whitaker was the last guy to KO him in 2017, but, Jacare's lost 3 of his last 4, too. He's got the win over Chris Weidman, but, Weidman,
not the same either. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking it. Weidman's been in some wars, so, I mean, he's a little long in the tooth, too. I tell you what, this ESPN card, I think it's pretty kick-ass. I like the ESPN card better than the main card.
All right, so listen.
Cerrone, Pettis, Waterson, Jacare.
Oh, no, it's fun. Oh, it's a good card.
It's a hard right there.
Listen, we've only got like a minute left here, a minute and a half. So the other fights we didn't get to, Esparza, Waterson, I'm on Waterson. I'm taking Bryce Mitchell against Charles Rosa. You mentioned Luque and Price. What do you think of Mitchell or Rosa? You know, the floor's yours here. You got Span and Alvey. You got about a minute here, Joy. What are your picks here on the other ones?
You know, I look at this. I want to like this Mitchell. I mean, this is a step up for him. But I think Bryce Mitchell can win this fight. Luque and Price, I don't know. It's tough to lay a favorite there. That might be the parlay buster. Alvey and Span. Alvey just finds ways to lose. You know, he's smiling all the way to the bank because he keeps getting paid for the in these losing efforts.
Yeah, smiling Sam Alvey. Yeah, you know, there's gotta be an underdog or two that wins along the way, right? On the prelim, somewhere along the way. As you stated, is it Nico? You got the Nico Price fight with Luque. Waterson is not a massive underdog, but that's the one that I've sort of gotten focused in on. She was plus 136. It's starting to come down a little bit. But, Joey, it's always a pleasure. You can find Joey on Twitter, at MMA Odds. And we'll be seeing Joey on Twitter over the weekend. It's great to have fights back. It'll be a big Saturday night. Thanks for the time, Joey.
Thanks, G. Have a good one.
There's Joey Odessa, MMA Odds on Twitter. Get on the grid. Sports Grid, Maurizio Filter, the podcast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Morenzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues thanks to the legendary Joey Odessa for stepping up and in at MMA Odds, kicking it with an old school MMA odds maker. And even he knows how tricky and difficult this card is. Yet, as I stated earlier, it's an instance where it's going to be great to have this information after, guys. I'm really going to be paying close attention to what the fighters say after the fact on Sunday and on Monday, etc., about their experience, what it was like, without the fans, without, and I don't even think the fans is the issue, but, you know, they're not in quarantine, but they're in isolation. There's less guys in their corner. It's just, there's extenuating circumstances for this card, yet some people will thrive in it. Some guys will tell you after, you know what, I actually liked it because of this. Some other people are going to say, you know what, I had a problem because of that, and that's why my performance sucked. So I look forward to the data, you know, of what we get after on Saturday. Now, let's bring in Andrew McInnes right now, sportsmemo.com. Like a lot of handicappers, he's anxiously awaiting the return of sports, and they are slowly but surely starting to return. UFC 249 on Saturday night. What's going on, McInnes? How you doing?
As good as I can be, Gabe. Happy to have some sports back. I appreciate you having me on the podcast, and just looking forward to Saturday, just like yourself. I've been checking out your stuff, and it sounds like you're just as excited as a lot of us to get some sports back and look forward to watching some fights here this Saturday. Great card loaded up for us.
Yeah, it is. It is a very good card. But, you know, great cards are often trickier cards to bet on. But I do look forward to it. Listen, the last time, and it hasn't even been that long, really. The UFC had a card. It was like April, I think it was April 11th. You know, don't hold me to the exact date, but it was a little over a month ago in Brazil without any fans, and we went 6-2. So it went, you know, it went well for us, and I'm hoping that we can do as well. I'll definitely take it. Listen, I'll take 6-2 if we can pull this off on Saturday night. But you mentioned podcast, and I know you're doing a podcast as well. And did I see on Twitter you were talking with Dave Naylor, TSN's Dave Naylor?
Yeah, I was talking with Dave Naylor yesterday, and Gabe, it was great talking with him and just catching up and seeing what his thoughts were about the CFL season. And I know CFL isn't a sport that's always talked about and everyone really talks about, but it was cool to kind of get some inside information and see what he really had to say about it. And the bottom line for him, what he was saying is he's not seeing it starting until at least September, if that at all. And, you know, we discussed the whole concept of them asking for $150 million from the government, and really what all of that covers, and a lot of it covers into going towards next year as well. You know, the workers and the players, everything from top to bottom. And it was really informative to talk with him about the league. He says the league's in great shape, but yeah, I really enjoyed speaking with him about that. And he actually was saying that, you know, not only about the players getting back to Canada, but it just right now, I mean, it's illegal to get 100 football players on a field together. So by the time that's even going to be legal, is it going to be enough time to have a football season? But the one advantage the CFL does have is how long the season has. I mean, every team played 18 games. It's a 21-week league, so there's lots of time to make adjustments.
Yeah, there is, and the season's too long. The season's been too long. It's ridiculous. You know, why would you play two more games than the National Football League does even? Right? Like, it's just dumb. Or I guess the NFL's adding a game now too, right? So it's just dumb, or they're going to be adding a game, whatever. It's just dumb that they play that many games. It's too long. Everyone knows, there's a saying that anyone who follows the CFL, that the games don't even matter and don't count until after Labor Day. And, you know, they start playing in the summer. I think the number's too high, $150 million per season. I love the CFL, but it's almost as though, you know, they want all their problems fixed because of this. Right? Like, there's a lot of franchises in the CFL that don't make money as it is, and they're not really losing anything because they're probably like, there's probably less net, like, negative for the Toronto Argonauts by not playing and playing, to be honest. So I don't really, no, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious. Like,
I agree.
You know what I mean? They only get like 10,000 fans, like, you know, on their overhead and stuff. So it just seems
Gabe,
like they came in.
Sorry about that, but he said the gate is very important. I thought that's the main topic that he touched on, is that the gate is way more important for the CFL versus the NFL is more of a viewership league. You know, he was saying he knows so many people, friends and colleagues of his, that have never even been to an NFL game, but it doesn't matter. But for the CFL, they need to average 23,000, 24,000 in order to continue their success.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is a gate-driven league. So is the National Hockey League. Right, so is the National Hockey League as well. But yeah, CFL, I think it's about 30-35% of their revenue. But that's what I'm saying. So if you look at teams that weren't doing well already, they already had problems, right? And now it's almost like they're looking for a full bailout of their problems that they had before. I almost sound like Trump now. This is what Trump is saying to the states, right? Well, I don't know, we're going to bail the state out. They were already messed up before the virus, so why am I going to bail them out? But that's a little bit different. When you're the president, you got to help the states out, as opposed to saving franchises that are owned by TSN and owned by Bell, etc. But that's another story. Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, the CFL also, they don't have the money. They don't have the same money and juice to pull stuff off as some of these other leagues, right? You know, they, like, the NFL could easily buy 150,000 tests. It wouldn't be a problem for them. But, like, the CFL couldn't afford it. It's just like the logistics of it would be too much. They need for things to die down more, which it will in Canada, actually. It will, but it's a good point by Naylor, McKinnis, because if you look, if you think about it, like, look, the CFL season, Toronto's not even open until June 30th. You know what I mean? Like, they have the city closed until the end of June, essentially. You know, the season would have already started. Like, the border is closed. You know, so it's obvious that the season's going to start later. The question is, how later? And I got no problem with it, man. If they play, like, a 12-game, 10-game CFL schedule, I mean, hell, they only have 9 teams. No, seriously, they could play 9 games. Everyone plays each other once. It'd be pretty cool. Everyone plays each other once. It's 9 games.
For sure.
You know, instead of 6 teams in a playoff, you know what I mean? We got 4 teams in the playoffs. And, you know, sort of like the XFL had a 10-game schedule, semifinals, finals. The Alliance Football League had the same thing, 10 football games. Look at college football, bro. College football is like bigger revenue getter than the CFL is. And even they only play 12 games, McKinnis. You know what I'm saying, in the regular season? They're like, no, we'll play 12 games, a championship game, 13, then the playoffs. But we're not playing 16 or 18 regular season games. We'll play, you know, it used to be 10 games, and it used to be 11 games. And then it's like, all right, we'll make it 12. But nevertheless, next weekend, bro, is when it really comes back. Next weekend, you'll have NASCAR, UFC, German soccer, and skins game golf going on at once. There'll be 4 sporting events going on at once next weekend. So that's going to be some good stuff. So it's slowly but surely coming back, at least internationally right now. But as far as the UFC is concerned, watching, doing your research and breaking everything down, what have you come up with for the UFC this week, McKinnis? What are you looking at to bet on this week?
It's been a lot of fun for me, Gabe. I've always wagered on UFC and always followed it, always watched the events, but I've never really gotten into it as much as I really have, and for obvious reasons. Same thing as the NFL draft. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, I've had so much free time, so much more available space to look at it, and the odds moving up and down, and so it's been great to look at it from a matchup standpoint and look at things. So I'll start with Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. I'm on Ferguson. I think the price is a pretty good price here, based off from what I've seen from numerous networks. I've heard you say this yourself as well, that if you do like him, to wait. A lot of people are really liking Justin Gaethje. But from basically what I've gathered and just seeing, this man is an absolute machine. He's a warrior, you know, and I think that's very cliche stuff to say about a UFC fighter, about a fighter in general. But it just seems like he's going to be able to withstand a longer fight. And he's going to be able to withstand the battle and the blood and everything that goes with that, where Gaethje is going to have to hurt Tony Ferguson really early on and get a really good clean shot in order for him to be successful. And looking at Tony Ferguson's path, you know, I'm a big storyline guy. I hate to admit it sometimes, but it's true. You know, storylines don't always come true, but sometimes they add up. And we know that Tony Ferguson was supposed to fight Khabib here, and we know that it's a different training style. He was already training, and then he stopped, and they went back at it again. We can look back at his injury that he had when he was supposed to fight him before. I mean, it's been so many times. He's tried to fight Khabib, and, you know, now again, this doesn't really work out for him. I just think he's a man on a mission. And, you know, who's to say that he can't get upset? You know, I'm not going to be that guy to step in and say that, but it just seems like the path that he's on and everything that I'm hearing from his camp and out of him, it's going to take a lot for Gaethje to come in there and catch him with a few rough ones and knock him down. I just don't feel like at this point Gaethje will be the guy that knocks him down. So that's the first pick that I'm on here, Gabe, is Ferguson.
You know what? I can't disagree with anything you stated there. Gaethje's a freaking warrior, and he's going to come in here looking to knock his head off early. But as the fight goes on, Ferguson will just get stronger and stronger, and Tony Ferguson's never been knocked out before. He's lost fights before, but not in a long time. And, you know, Gaethje has been in deep waters. He went 4 rounds with Dustin Poirier, and it was a pretty crazy fight. So he's capable of doing it. But Tony Ferguson is just so unorthodox that, you know, people, I think that his opponents sort of underestimate him. Like, you know, they all sort of say the same thing that, you know, they don't, you know, he doesn't do anything. It's not like it's one thing that he does great. It's just sort of everything that he does. And it adds up, right? They're like, you know, he doesn't get fazed when you hit him, really. He likes pain. He seems to, like, want to out-suffer you. And they all say the same thing, just how unorthodox he is once you fight him. They're like, you know, you can't really plan for it because he does weird things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's so traditional in mixed martial arts, McInnes. You know what I mean? Like, it's very standard. You know, combo, kick, whatever, jujitsu. There's, you know, John Jones, like, used to be very unorthodox. Like, he would just do things that no one did. And not even, you know what I mean? Like, he would just, like, you know, and I remember John Jones told me that he learned MMA by watching YouTube. And he basically would just sort of watch Anderson Silva do, like, this weird elbow, spinning elbow, and then he'd practice it. Or Bruce Lee, he'd see something Bruce Lee would do, and he'd figure, why can't I do that in a fight? And he would just sort of apply it. Now, as he got older and he's a champion, he's pretty safe now, actually. He doesn't screw around anymore. Ferguson still is very, very reckless, right? And, you know, I talked about it earlier on the show in the week. I read a story, and it was like six fighters that fought Ferguson and what they said after. And they all said the same thing, that he's reckless, but not in a bad way. They're basically like, you know, in a cage, he'll sort of do something you don't expect him to do. Like, you're like, nah, no one would do that. That's pretty crazy if we tried that. He'll do it, right? But he does it before you even realize he's doing it. And then after, you're like, what the F did this guy just do? And he's got very bony elbows as well. He could bust up Gaethje at some point here. It's going to be a hell of a fight, but I agree. I'm on Tony Ferguson. Listen, Gaethje could win. I don't love the number, McInnes. I don't love the number. Gaethje's a dangerous fighter to be getting plus 150 with. But, you know, I'm not betting the numbers. I'm betting on who I'm going to think is going to win the fight. And who I think is going to win the fight is Tony Ferguson. So what about, what else you got?
Yeah, and that's what's cool about the UFC as well, is obviously you want to be getting a good number, but at the end of the day, it's also just picking who's going to win. You know, you can find the value, but also just picking
exactly
who's going to win the fight. And I've definitely found that kind of cool, Gabe, as well, because when I'm betting on, let's say, the Tampa Bay Lightning in hockey, you know, I'm not usually laying minus 250, but, you know, it's a whole different story in a different sport. And you know, I found it so cool, Dana White just – I don't love the headlines like this, but he said, you know, this is going to be one of the best fights of the year. He said that this is going to be an absolute bloodbath. They're going to be trying to kill each other from the second the bell rings, and we'll see. We'll see how that works. I mean, I think that a promoter or any type of guy that's running, you know, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, like Dana White is, would say that. But I actually really believed him when he said that. So, you know, we'll find out if he says that all the time or he's actually serious with this. But another pick that I'm on, and this is one I think that you're on as well, so I'll hopefully be against the grain on you with a couple of them, but I'm on Cejudo, and I'll keep it really short with this one. Look, I know that we've seen it before with Cruz, how he's come back off a layoff and been successful, but it seems to me that Cejudo is this cocky guy that is just not going to have any of it. You know, he's going to be thinking, okay, you know what, this guy, I saw him on Twitter. I mean, he literally tweeted out, he's like, I'm going to show you that ring rust actually is a thing. You know, I'm going to show you that you being out of the octagon for so long and coming back and trying to take me down as a joke. You know, it seems like he's not taking it seriously, and that might be the only thing that scares me about it. But it just feels like Cejudo right now is the more primed fighter, the man on a mission, and he's definitely been, you know, I think he's had some great fights, and he's taken down some good guys, you know, knockouts in three of his last five wins, and He's arguably the most accomplished wrestler in the sport. You know, he's gold medals. The list goes on. Anyone that follows UFC definitely knows all the accolades that he has. And like I said to you at the top, Gabe, I want to make it really clear. It's been a blast for me researching and finding out a lot about these guys. So I like Cejudo here. Another one that I'm on here is I was really excited to talk about this one, the Pettis and Donald Cerrone fight. This is just an absolutely packed card, but like you said, sometimes a packed card, an exciting card from a fan perspective, can be a little bit, you know, a little bit harder to handicap. But I decided to go here with Donald Cerrone at the plus price. And one of the reasons was based off an interview at first. I really was interested in watching interviews from both parties, Pettis and Cerrone. But I'm a big fan, Gabe, of people admitting when they were wrong in general in life, but also admitting when they didn't do something right in the world of sports. And it really, it hit home with me when Donald Cerrone said, you know, I wasn't there for that Conor McGregor fight. He said, Donald showed up, but Cowboy didn't. And I really like that headline. I'm sure a lot of people could say stuff like that.
Say
things all the time.
I don't want to cut you off, but we got to get out of here. But it's a very good point that you raised. Listen, I've been leading with Pettis on this fight. I'm getting cold feet. And the fact that Cowboy, I didn't even hear that quote. I'm glad that you brought it up because it is a great quote that he wasn't himself. He showed up for the paycheck. And he's going to have something to prove. And plus, Pettis beat him before as well. Right? So it's almost like double. Exactly. It's like a double revenge spot in sports almost. But great point that you raised. Find McKinnis, Andrew McKinnis. On Twitter, sportsmemo.com. We got to get out of here and get on to Grand Rancy. I'll filter the podcast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.